we'll explain how we expect the mesinos to affect Big Bang nuclear synthesis. And we can calculate an upper bound on the concentration of them. Finally, we'll look at the possible impacts on lithium and then go to conclusions. So we're hoping that introducing long-lived strong coupling particle relics will open up new thermal channels that can catalyze BBN. It's already been shown by Maxim that at temperatures of 5 to 30 keV, electromagnetically interacting particles can catalyze things. So it's natural to ask, what about strongly interacting ones? So several examples that we can think of are long-lived gluinos. We can have some types of long-lived quarks. And what we're going to be focusing on is scalar quarks, particularly the scalar bottom and the scalar top quark. One way that we can come up with one of these quarks that lives long enough is to assume that it's the next lightest supersymmetric particle to the gravitino. And because of the small coupling, we can conceivably get the lifetime long enough to be able to catalyze BBN. So how are they going to hadronize? Oh, for the anti-stop and the anti-s bottom, they can bind to form mesino-like objects, meson-like objects, we'll call mesinos. However, the scalar quarks that bind to anti-quarks will interact with the protons and neutrons and quickly become this baryon-like substance, which is an isosinglet. And we'll see that that won't actually help catalyze BBN, at least. It won't have to help catalyze helium synthesis, which is what we've had a chance to look at so far. If you want to see more details on this, Diaz-Cruzeal, and there's their archive number. So what do we, these mesinos are going to form isospin doublets. And it's in order to get a prediction for how much they're going to impact the helium abundance, we need to have an estimate of how big their mass differences are. So if we're dealing with the stop quark, the expected mass difference, we're going to assume they behave sort of like a d-meson. So we're guessing that it'll be in the range of roughly 4.5 MeV mass difference. If it's a scalar bottom quark, then the mass difference will be considerably smaller and will probably be in the range of 0.3 MeV. One thing that we should note is that from the B mesons, we can't tell if they're stable against beta decay, just because the mass isn't well known enough and they decay through other channels before they could ever beta decay could ever be observed. So how are the mesinos able to affect helium abundance? Well, the proton and the neutron can change places through weak decays. Same thing with the mesinos. However, the proton and the mesino can interact with each other through a strong reaction to change places. And even though there's far smaller number of mesinos than there are of baryons, the fact that the strong interaction, the velocity average cross-section is so much larger for the strong interaction, means that this rate can be comparable to the expansion rate of the universe and therefore important. So the Feynman rules for the mesinos are similar to those for normal hadrons. And that is, the only thing that changes for the weak interaction is that we get Ga tilde instead of Ga, which is on the order of 1. And I believe that's determined by lattice QCD. For the interactions of the mesinos and the baryons, we're just going to use a one single pion exchange, just to get an approximation of what the cross-section should be. We know this is just an approximation. We have to go back and check and make sure that it's valid. But at the moment, it should give us a rough idea of how the system's going to behave. So how many mesinos can we expect to have? Well, by doing a simple relic abundance calculation, we can get the behavior to be on the order of this, with the cross-section being, with the sigma naught being the velocity average cross-section for squark squark annihilation.
Yes, yes, this is
the steel squall.
This is before the QCD phase transition. And just looking at the possible annihilation to two gluons, we got an abundance roughly equal to the 4.6 times 10 to the minus 4 times the mass of the Mazzino, or TeV. But this isn't the whole picture. Kang et al. Estimated the squark relic abundance, taking into consideration the interactions of the Mazzinos and baryon-like objects. And this is because they can form high angular momentum states and then decay quickly. And they're depending on the cross-section you take for the hadron, for the Mazzino-Mazzino cross-section, you can get get an abundance as low as 10 to the minus 7.
That could be high.
So this is probably every one of you know this diagram. It's helium production. It's for helium production without catalysis. We're going to assume that all the neutrons at this point get converted into helium-4. It's not precise, it's not exact, but it's a pretty good approximation. By introducing the Mazzinos, we can get for a light mass, a small mass difference, in other words, less than the difference between the proton and the neutron, we get a suppression of the helium abundance. This is quite a few. This is on the order of half the a fraction of about one half compared to the Mazzino's to baryon ratio. And in the other opposite case where we the mass difference is large, you get actually an enhancement of the number of neutrons at the end of at the neutron-proton free zone. So how do we explain this? Well, in the light case, in the small mass difference case, you can have a proton that decays to a neutron through the weak force, then gets taken back to the proton through the strong interaction. But then the Mazzino can get brought back using the weak interaction. So after weak interactions freeze out, you can get all of, you can still have the remaining positive Mazzinos decay, convert the neutrons into protons, which explains why you get a noticeable a noticeable suppression of the neutrons at this point. Why is there no off? Oh, it just this is as the beta decay freezes up, and this is when there's a small mass difference. In other words, the reaction is favored of neutrons decaying to neutrons decaying to protons, and even despite the fact that this particle
is I'm not familiar with the mass spectrum of such a Mazzino, but okay.
I'm sure you have both in both ways, but if you pull the system, say you have a degenerate exotic hadrons, and then at some point neutrons would like to dump their energy and become protons, including the charge in the system. That's exactly what happens, and the reverse wouldn't go because you'd be already at temperatures.
Okay. In background, there are more protons. There are more protons.
But not by much than neutrons.
And also,
a factor of six. So that's not going to overcome the exponentials. Do you have both reactions in your code?
Yes. And unfortunately, we haven't quite worked out the case with the large mass difference to get a simple analytic understanding of why it gives a small enhancement. The thing is, in this case, we require a very large concentration of Mazzinos on the order of or more than the concentration of baryons, which is somewhat slightly contrived. So using the experimental bounds on the helium mass fraction, we can see just how many Mazzinos we can push into this system and get an upper bound on the concentration of Mazzinos that we can expect.
So looking at the two sigma variation in the PDG review, we get the mass, helium mass fraction somewhere between 0.230 and 0.267. Roughly, this is associated roughly with 0.115 to 0.134 ratio of the neutrons to baryons. So if the introduction of mesinos causes a larger difference than 0.019 in the neutron fraction, then it would be observable. From this, we get the following plot for the maximum possible value of the mesino fraction. Now, at low mass behavior, it flattens out and gives us an upper bound of 3.8 × 10⁻². Here, however, it's getting so large that we're suspicious of the model. The reason for this peak is because when the mass difference between the mesino, the positive mesino, the two mesinos is the same as the proton-neutron difference, then it's almost identical to just increasing the concentrations of neutrons in your system. In other words, and since that doesn't actually enter into the concentration doesn't enter into the Boltzmann equation, you wouldn't expect there to be any difference. You wouldn't expect any concentration of mesinos to be enough to change your final proton abundance and neutron abundance. The reason there is a cap here and that it does come to a finite value is because of the only difference between the systems, which is the difference between the axial vector couplings. One is 1.26 and one is just one. So as I said, for the low mass bound is 3.8 × 10⁻². And for the larger values of delta M, there's little sensitivity to the concentration of mesinos. So even though this is much higher concentration than we expected from just naively having the particles annihilate, and it is possible to introduce an asymmetry to the squark anti-squark abundances. And if we do this, then we can, and we also have to suppress the relationships between of a squark in exchanging a gluon and becoming quarks, because that can get rid of your asymmetry. But we can introduce a model where that would have concentrations this high. So what are the effects? What would be the effect on lithium?
Okay. Well, if you have an interaction, between the squarks that then these two can, if there's a large asymmetry between the two, theoretically they could exchange a gluon and become a gluino, and become a quark and an anti-quark. So we have to make sure that this interaction doesn't take place, say, by having the gluino heavier than the squarks or something along those lines.
It will never occur in anything that is remotely like in the system, unless you decouple the.
Okay, so it's not just heavier, you mean?
Quite a bit heavier, right? Any variance of MSSM, the abundance, the asymmetry will be small and the abundance will be small. We just look at them in general.
So it is slightly contrived to have to set up an asymmetry that large, but we are able to rule it out. So this part is speculative because we haven't had time to go into it and actually look at how these particles are going to bond. But depending on how the mesinos behave, we can have different effects on the lithium abundances. The two cases we're going to deal with are if mesinos remain free from the nuclei and if the mesinos bind to the protons, bind to the protons and neutrons into helium-like nuclei. So the first case, if the mesinos are free. First thing that we should note is if it's stop quark systems where the mass difference between two states is 4.5 MeV, not much is going to happen, since the mesinos will all have beta decay by the time we start dealing with nucleosynthesis,
And the actual, like, the mass difference is quite significant by this point. However, the spotting mesinos still stay interesting because their small mass separation keeps them from beta decaying quickly, and so they can still be have interesting effects during debeaking. The reactions that we're most interested in are the beryllium plus a neutron goes to lithium plus a proton, and there's no reason that the mesino, the B mesino can, or spotum mesino, can't substitute for the neutron in this reaction. In this case, we can expect we can make a guess at the effect of introducing a certain mass fraction of a certain fraction of the xenos into this system by looking at an effective number of neutrons, which is given by the actual number of neutrons plus the mesino fraction multiplied by the cross section for the reaction involving mesinos divided by the cross section for the reaction involving neutrons. And given that, we can get the following result. So if the correction to the neutrons is on the order of 3 × 10⁻⁷, we can push the beryllium and lithium, beryllium 7 plus lithium 7 abundance all the way down to be within experimental range, which is kind of neat and definitely warrants going back and looking at it further. But what about bound mesons? So nothing is keeping these particles from binding with the protons and neutrons. And in fact, because they've got spin 1/2 and similar isospin, we would guess that they would form helium 4 type nuclei. Now, since these particles do have to decay eventually, they can then throw off a tritium or helium 3 remainder that will have a certain amount of kinetic energy that we will assume is on the order of the binding energy, which is 15, around which we expect to be around 15 MeV. And we expect that to help with reactions of this form to create lithium 6. Now, normally these reactions won't take place because they require a certain amount of kinetic energy to actually proceed. But if the tritium or helium 3 are thrown off from the decaying helium 4 like object with enough energy, then they can actually proceed and we can generate a certain amount of lithium 6. And for a mesino fraction of 10⁻⁷ and with an efficiency of 10⁻⁴, we can still produce 10⁻⁻ concentration of lithium 6. So conclusions. In the limit of low mass splitting, we found an upper bound on the mesino fraction of 3.8 × 10⁻², without violating experimental bounds on the concentration of helium 4. And even small abundances of mesinos can have a large effect on lithium 6 and lithium 7 abundances. But we do have to go back and look more carefully at how these nuclear reactions take place. The one nice thing about the helium 4 abundance calculation is that it only depends on how we assume the axial vector coupling behaves. And other than that, there aren't all that many assumptions going into it. So suffice it to say, there's a considerable amount of work that we still have to do in this area. That's it.
I'm surprised that such a small correction to the neutron effective density, like it looked like 10⁻⁷, is the point that the neutron density is so low?
It's very small at that point, because they've all been used up into the helium, well, almost all of them have been used up into helium 4 by that point.
Oh, okay.
So that's sort of what motivated us to actually look at this.
It's sort of building on Karsten's idea. And inject more neutrons, but now if these are like new particles that are not consumed by protons, that they can still invigorate this beryllium to lithium transition.
Yeah.
This is too much to ask. It is the most likely they're going to be sucked into the helium light. But it's nothing like it cannot be you know, figured out or investigated. You know, people can calculate the spectral of light nuclear and through sort of well influence. So this is quite possible. I may add that this is indeed another example of catalysis where, in principle, these particles could, you know, decay with very, very little energy release, right? But this, the degree of helium-3, helium-like structure, right, will necessarily be released with something like tens of MeV's energies. Feeding into what everyone likes to see, like the helium 3 impinging on helium 4 with above the leaking 6 reduction. That's very much working, obviously. Right, there are no more questions. Let's thank you.